Hey everybody, this is Kate Rhodes. Before we get to this amazing episode of Congratulations Pine Tree, I want to alert you that there is a link in the underworld that I would love for you to click so you can sign an open letter demanding that the city stop layoffs at the San Francisco Arts Commission. Get down there, sign it, and we'll give you two thumbs up. Okay, here's the show.
Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
And we're here talking to Ebdi, artist and
educator.
Bon vivant.
First time.
What word do you use to describe yourself?
First time
Ebdi?
To get bon vivant. I like it. I got a Renaissance woman before.
Oh. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
Very good.
Because I'm an artist, I'm a translator.
Yeah. I was reading about your translation.
You were?
I was a little bit. So am I correct in saying that you were born in Cairo, Egypt?
Yes, you are correct.
Do you want to talk a little bit about your trajectory to get here to San Francisco?
Oh, yeah, sure. I was born in Cairo, went to a German school, which is a whole thing that is weird, but here we are. So I learned German basically from kindergarten. So my second language is German after Egyptian Arabic. So I've been living in the States now 13 years. So who knows where English is, second and third, they switch places. And then I studied German literature at Cairo University. So I come from the humanities. Mm-hmm. Can you see that English is not my first language and also sometimes not my second language, humanities. And then I did a master's in Germany in translation because I've always loved languages. And I grew up in this school and I learned English and French on top of German. And obviously there's Arabic that's looming somewhere there. Yeah. And then I did my master's in translation and then I worked in translation. And my ex's work got us here 13 years ago. So my first was in Seattle, Washington, and then San Francisco since 2015.
And you did grad school at CCA.
I did grad school at CCA, RIP.
RIP to CCA. Wow, that's still kind of fresh for me.
It's very fresh. It's very fresh and very painful.
Yeah.
Can I just ask about translation? Was there something specific? Were you translating books or were you just translating conversations or what were you doing with that?
So my education was in translation and interpretation and I was trained in both specialized translation, like doing boring stuff like contracts and legal stuff, mm-hmm. and whatever, papers, and also theater and literature. My background was in literature already, and I did interpretation. So for a while, I did sit in booth and did simultaneous translations, mm-hmm. interpretation, which is beautiful and brutal and many stories. But then when I finished what I specialized in, because I also started working in theater coincidentally, but long story got me there. So I also started working as a translator in theater, meaning that I was doing the super titles for plays, like as opposed to subtitles, super titles are projected on top of the stage, basically. So I did that.
I've seen that in the opera.
Yes. Like so you see it. You see it in the opera a lot. You don't see it in theater here much because, I mean, as far as I know, there isn't much like international theater. But when I lived in Egypt and went to Germany because, you know, when I studied in Germany, we were on tour in Europe. So you'd have international theater festivals, kind of the independent kind, and you have plays from all over the world. Mm. So super titles are very common. So that's what I did. And then I did books. I also specialized in young adult fiction and children's books from German to Arabic.
Okay. That's amazing. I always love the art of translation to me is forever fascinating. Just how like that the translator's voice really comes through, like, you know, your own understanding of the book and the language is very visible in that way, which I think is really beautiful.
Which is the reason why I left translation, because there were so many fights over how much the translator's voice comes through that I was so tired of it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Wow.
What's the weirdest theater thing that you ever translated?
Oh, I did many, but there was one which I don't think is it weird. I mean, I attended a lot of weird because I was there at festivals, and then in Europe there's a lot of yelling at you, like people just coming up close to your face and yelling at you, or like sitting through like 3 hour plays or 5 hour plays.
Wow.
So that type of thing. I mean, I really miss it. I love it. I did translate something for that was about what's the money conference in Switzerland. So it's like the G7, but like for anyway. So it was very. I mean, I learned a lot because I obviously do not engage with that sector of the world. Mm-hmm. So reading a play like translating a play like this, I had to do a lot of research to understand. Mm-hmm. What they're talking about. Yeah, so not weird. I mean, you know, everything was weird, but it was very interesting. I don't know. Yeah, I'll get back to you on that.
Do you see a lot of theater in SF?
No, zero.
Zero?
Almost
Have you
zero.
Lost interest, or is this not the same?
I just don't like it here, sorry.
No, that's okay. I was trying to get to that. Like, what is it about here?
I just don't, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No.
Okay. I love it.
I have been in my, you know, 10, 11 years of living here now, Golden Thread Theater, obviously, because they have, you know, a lot of like era programming.
Yeah.
I don't know how many years ago there was a play called 47. And it was about the Nakba. Mm. You know, it was fine, you know.
Yeah.
And then they and someone else just recently had something about the Egyptian Revolution. And that was also fine. I mean, I have my own feelings about that, but just because personal feelings. I mean, otherwise, I should probably explore more, but I have not found myself. I've been to a musical, which doesn't count for me.
Oh, Kate is really into musicals right now.
Oh.
I love it.
I mean, I get it. I don't, but I get it, you know? I would listen to them, and say, but I don't need to go and look at watch them do it, musify. Yeah, I can just listen to them.
I'd rather just listen to the musical. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I love it.
So what was the transition into being an artist like?
Do you consider yourself an artist? Like, where are you in that realm?
For sure. Okay. Yeah. Oh, no, I am. I think the moment this happened, everything made sense, but it was kind of a long process, and it did start with an existential crisis because I moved here and all my connections were in Egypt and in Germany, and the translation world in the US is different. There isn't a lot of funding as far as I know. I also lived, I mean, I guess Egypt, like kind of where I lived and the connection to Europe, there's just a lot of like cultural programs, and I worked at the Goethe Institute, so I also sitting at this like, I mean, it's like this fucked up thing of like cultural institutions having places in Egypt and they're funding projects. I mean, they make, they do beautiful work, and also it's fucked up because it's soft power and because it's like colonialism. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but just to say that I was really very engaged with what type of money is coming in. Like I was part of Kalima, which is a huge translation project coming out of Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. And they started this when I was in school in Germany as a revival of translation, kind of a nod to how Arabs in the Islamic era had a lot of like, they when they were like good in the sciences, and then there was the translation movement from Europe, Arab stuff translated into Latin, and this is how a lot of like algebra and chemistry and all these sciences got translated and transferred to Europe. So kind of as a nod to that, and how obviously this dynamic shifted with knowledge production not coming out of the Arab world anymore. So Abu Dhabi, so United Arab Emirates have money, they have money. So they started this project Kalima, and they were just throwing money at people. Mm-hmm. And I was working with the person who was in charge of the German section, because they were working from all the languages into Arabic, trying to, again, like, create this movement of translation knowledge from languages into Arabic. So coming here, I'm like, I have no idea who's funding translation and what to do. And I didn't, like, I had learned English from fourth grade, but when I moved here, I wasn't used to speaking English on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And I was very overwhelmed because everyone just talks at you very quickly and they say many things. And then there are many questions and many comments, especially on the West Coast. Everyone is like, I like your pants. Would you like a receipt? We sit in the back or with you? I don't know why are we asking if the receipt is in the back or with me. Just make a decision if you printed the receipt. And I looked like I couldn't understand English because that's I was amazing. So it was hard, right? So it took me a minute. And in the meantime, I have connections in Egypt and in Germany. And people are like, oh, do you want to come to Germany and like translate? I'm like, I don't have a visa. I need a visa for that. Haha, you know? Yeah. So I still kind of, I didn't have a job here, so I was traveling a lot. So I did try to, I was on tour with like a play for like a couple years.
Oh, wow.
But then I was traveling so much, it was exhausting. Just to say that I really tried to hang on to whatever is left of my like translation things. In the meantime, I'm having fights with people about how much interpretation I'm allowed to do as a translator with my like colleagues and all that. So yeah, there was a moment of like, I can't do this anymore. And I took 1 year break. Didn't work at all. Was in my crisis of like, what am I doing now with my life and all that. And then after that, I took one last assignment, one last gig. I translated one of my favorite childhood novels, which coincidentally happened to like go this way, that publishing house in Lebanon reached out. They wanted to do a new translation of Momo, which is a book I read often in my performances now. It's one of my favorite books by Michael Ende, who wrote The Neverending Story.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Momo is another book of his that people don't know, but is so good. Mm-hmm. So I did that and then I stopped. I was like, this is my going out, not to feel like I wasted so many years on that for nothing. And then I there was a lot of conversations with a lot of friends, and I realized that I've always loved photography, and I got my first camera and I started taking pictures, and then I was like, oh, I think I'm into that. And I started working. In the meantime, I had moved here. That's 2015 now. And I was like finding meetups for photographers, reach out to people, just cold emailed, like, can I come to your studio and learn and all that. And I started to do commercial photography. Mm-hmm. So I went assisted and did all that stuff. Did wedding, did events, did headshots. And then I realized that I'm very bored of this and that I actually want to study art. Which is how I get to CCA. Coincidentally, because my friend Yomna was there and she was like, oh, you should come. And I'm like, okay, cool. So
cool. Here I am.
Sure. Let's do it. Yeah.
So photography is still part of your art practice, but you branched out into lots of other ways of making. How did that happen?
Well, it actually happened when my dad died. Because I started grad school in 2019, in the fall, and he died 3 weeks after I started grad school, which was not great. And I went into this crisis of, like, just, you know, completely lost balance, obviously, and all that. Mm-hmm. Like, I lost my mom a long time ago, so it's very weird to lose both parents. Yeah. It's a whole other, you know, anyway. And I think, like, I came in, I had work that was photography, and some of it he, like, saw because I was making work around how he arranged spaces, which I'm still making now. And then he dies, and I'm like, I don't know what to do now. It felt hard to look at the pictures that I took because, you know, and I took a lot of pictures of him and all that. So I think what happened in this moment is that I, like, kind of switched to making. And I come from a family of makers. Like, my uncles are tailors, my mom crocheted, my dad went to art school and he did stained glass and he did silk screen print, he did everything. I learned none of these things. I just grew up around that. And me and my sister did crafts, lots of crafts. Okay. They would give us stuff to like cut and paste. And basically that's what I started doing. What I know to do is that I can collage, I can cut, I can come up, I can, you know, try and make a palm tree. So the first thing I did in my grad studio was make a palm tree out of paper, mm-hmm. as a way to like think about him. And I didn't go back when he died because he was buried already. So there was no point, mm-hmm. you know, so I just stayed here. And then I went back during winter break. So this was the moment where it became about surviving his death by making all these things. So I made a palm tree, put it up in my grad studio. I wrote a piece of music because I used to be a musician and I stopped. So I was like found like, you know, so I was like writing. Anyway, so I did all of these things because I was just trying to, you know, make things to survive his death. And this is basically how it happened that there was a moment where after like the grieving let a little bit, I was, and I wouldn't talk to people about how I don't have an art education in my undergrad. I mean, I didn't lie about it. I just didn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And then there was a moment where it kind of all clicked in the pandemic. I was having my own journey during the pandemic because everyone was like doing pandemic and I was doing like my dad's dying. Yeah. And there was a moment like, oh, wow, everything belongs together. Mm-hmm. My translation, my theater work. And then this is kind of where everything exploded. And I started performing the short story that one of my favorite short stories in German, A Table is a Table, that I also performed many times now. And I wrote it in like Arabic, German, English, and I would read it in consecutively in all the four languages. I did like a Zoom performance, the first one. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so there was just a moment where I'm like, oh, everything I did makes sense for my art practice. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of, from there, that's it.
I was thinking about like some of your photography or your exhibitions where you used fabric almost like a, you know, like a curtain is sort of making me think about, oh, there's the theater play or tie-in in those elements.
There is it's funny you say that because for me it's the tie-in to my uncles being tailors, mm-hmm. but I guess it's the theater too. I'm still learning, you know, I'm still discovering. I wrote a lot about embodied knowledge in my thesis, and fabric is a material I grew up around, mm-hmm. because I grew up in a building with my whole family in it, and my uncle's workshop was at the ground floor. Wow. And me and my sister, there's like a weird generational gap in my family's generations. So there was a moment where me and my sister were the only like children in the family. So my cousins are now in their 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. So there's like a 10 to 20 gap. So when we were kids, we would play in my uncle's workshop. We would just play with the fabric, and there's a whole drawer of buttons.
Oh, yeah.
It's so fun.
Hell yeah.
Oh, my God.
Zippers, a whole drawer of zippers.
Yeah.
So I think I'm just very comfortable with fabric. Mm. Again, though, I have no idea. Like, I'm trying now to learn to sew. Shout out to Pippa, who's we went to grad school together. And she started teaching me how to sew. My friend Amy lent me her sewing machine. Julian Crochet offered to help. Yeah. You know, we're kind of crowdfunding my education. But I don't know how to sew. But I just like fabric. So I've gotten by until now by that.
Is there still like a tailoring business in your family, or did that
stop
with your...
Not since my dad's two older brothers were the two people who kind of brought the entire family from the village to Cairo, mm-hmm. for their tailoring business. And my uncle died in the 90s, and then the other one, his brother, he died in 2019, same year as my dad. And since he died, no one else. And that's, it's like an interesting thing because I think this was an attempt to do a, what you call it, like a vertical climb into the ladder, social ladder, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. in the 50s and 60s, it wasn't cool to be a tailor. It was, when you were a maker, it was, you know, you were...
Low class.
Yeah. Like not uneducated, right? Mm-hmm. And my uncles invested their money to educate their kids and my dad because he was way younger so that they can be like basically, you can't call a tailor blue collar really, but this is how it felt like. Mm-hmm. That is someone who works with their hands.
Yeah.
But like, and then to switch to being white collar. So no one learned how to sew. Right. I have one cousin who, she's in her 60s now. She's the closest person to me and she knows, but like no one was given the
that knowledge or
No.
Okay, so I saw your show at SF Camera Work, and you incorporated the color gold into it a lot. I was wondering about your use of gold and like what that means and all that.
Yeah, I remember when you came, it was so nice. and also, it's now like, what, 2 years ago? My God.
Is that all?
It feels like eternity.
It feels a long time ago, but maybe not.
Who knows? It was 24. It was in 24.
Wow.
Which is 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's true.
But
it's
who knows?
Just 2 years ago.
Maybe it was 5 years ago. Maybe 24 was 5 years ago. Maybe we'll live in the future. And no one knows. Gold started, I think, as a personal preference. And I did the digging that artists have to do when they need to know why they're attracted to something. And my uncle, who just passed away, and I have a lot of death in my family. I'm sorry. It just in December, and he was an Egyptologist and a painter. And so I really just grew up around a lot of gold, like very cliche Egyptian. Went to the Egyptian Museum and saw the Tutankhamun's like jewelry. My dad talked about it a lot because he said that he was part of, because you know he studied art. My uncle was an artist, so they were like with the culture and arts people in Egypt. My mom wore a lot of gold. And then I think as a photographer, just the reflectivity of gold I like. And then digging deeper into the symbolism of gold in ancient Egyptian culture, it then becomes about the sun, right? And then the sun becomes about eternal life and also death and rebirth, right? Because the sun like dies every day, wakes up every day. So ancient Egyptians used the gold for that, thinking about the sun. So, and then I just kind of leaned into it.
So this, we're talking about time.
Yes.
And how weird it is. And the sun is also related to time. And then also this is such a like circuitous question. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then so recently you've been working with light bulbs.
Yes.
Which are like challenging the sun in terms of like lengthening in terms of like lengthening our time, our day, and like our access to light. So I don't know, do you tie those things together or is that like totally separate?
I mean, I tie them together in the sense that light bulb started with my dad because he had this, there's always a lot, I never give short answers. Anyway, my dad, I would go back and visit and he would have more light bulbs in this other house he built outside of Cairo for safety. And they would be on. And then
just
I was
like a bunch of light bulbs?
Just, I mean, they're on the wall. Like he would just find a place to put them on the wall. And it's just like, there's so, I have so many
like,
pictures of them.
Here?
Yeah. And then there were break-ins in the area where he had this house. And then also there was it's a fun story, but he was sleeping in our apartment in Cairo and a thief broke into the apartment.
While he was sleeping.
No. And the thief passed out under the bed inside the bedroom. And my dad eventually woke up because he heard the noise and thought my family is there. So people go in, like we have the keys in the door.
Yeah.
You know, this type of household. So he thought my cousin's son is in there. And then he goes in, but then he finds a passed out stranger. They were high, drugs, whatever.
Oh my God.
So my dad grabs his arm, but this thief has no arm. He has one arm. So he grabs him from the other arm and then calls my cousins, and my cousins beat him up because, you know, it's Egypt.
And then they
deliver him to the cops. So after this incident, my dad started putting up so many lights everywhere because for him it was safety.
Right.
So from that incident, anyway, so light bulbs began with that. And then after he passed away, and then I went to Egypt for the first time, the light bulbs were off. So I was thinking about how light is connected to us being alive, and light in a house signals that someone's in the house. Like think about when people travel and leave their lights on to make people think their lights are on, that someone's in there. And then, so that was the thinking behind the light bulb specifically, and the lights on and the lights off. And then there's a whole like round circle of thinking that then my brother-in-law, who lives in the same other house outside of Cairo, started putting on more light bulbs because he channels my dad's energy so much. And I'm like, oh, and then someone comes and turns on the lights again. And then the pieces kind of range from light bulbs being turned off, and then I have the piece with the coat rack and the light bulbs hanging from it, and they're all lit. Mm-hmm. Because it's about someone else will come and turn on the lights, mm-hmm. right? Like usually, you know, there's so I've experienced so much loss in my family, and somehow, you know, someone else comes into that place and now lives there and the light's on again. So mm-hmm. it's connected in the sense that it's life and death, but there was no competition between the light bulb and the sun, in my mind. But I guess I think about it now.
I love that. Just like the bare light bulb is interesting to me too. Like we don't like I feel like in this country we don't do bare light bulbs. Like everything.
Oh, for sure.
It's like a soft color. There's a shade. All of that. Like if you have a bare light bulb, it's kind of looked down. You know what I mean? Like it's weird.
For sure.
So I'm just curious about the bare light bulb. And this is, I mean, if you could talk about that. I mean, it's different. If it's a lampshade, it's very different. It's very domestic versus maybe like, I don't know, it has a really different feeling.
There is something about the haphazardness of it all. And I have like a series that I actually never put out. But my dad, they basically stole electricity from the government. So okay. The light bulb is like connected to like an outside like... electric lines.
Okay, they just find a way to plug into those or something.
Yeah. So there's that, right? And I think there's just this thing where, yeah, you don't have like regulations. You don't really have safety concerns. Like I find myself here when I'm installing, anyone who's witnessed me install knows that I'm very reckless and everyone's like, oh my God, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, you know, it's just, anyway. So yes, bare light bulbs definitely are a thing. But that's why when you start paying attention to them, you see them everywhere. Like I take pictures of them in mind, trying to be like, okay, you can get disoriented at the headlands. Mm-hmm. I spent a year there after grad school, and they have these bare light bulbs. Mm. I'm like, aha, bare light bulbs even
there.
Here.
Okay, good.
Right? So when you pay attention, you start seeing them, and I photograph them. Also work that I never put out. I'm realizing nowadays that I think I hoard my own work. It's very weird.
It's yours to hoard, Abdi.
Well, I took a break and I came back and now I'm like facing all these, like, I don't know what I'm doing with my work, but it's fine. But now I'm realizing, oh, this also I didn't put out. Yeah, so, but yeah, there is something about that you don't see here often. Mm-hmm. Only if you pay attention, you would.
We actually, our bedroom, we have a bare light bulb, but we don't use it that much.
Great. Is it the pretty one?
No, it's just a regular fucking light bulb.
Why is
it's
it bare?
It's the ceiling. Because I don't really like overhead lights. I like lamp light.
Right.
So we just don't use it.
Right, right.
And it's bare because the shade broke ages ago and we just never replaced it. We're just
I should take slugs. A picture of that.
Okay.
For my unpublished collection of bare light
bulbs.
Yeah,
you're welcome to.
To add it to one of my hoarded collections.
Just the other day, I was like, I should probably get a lampshade for that.
I mean, I think it's really an aesthetic. I like, so I was... I was very lucky to have good mentors in my life and friends who, and one was like, you write, as an artist, when you say I like this, someone will always say, you have to write about this. So light bulbs are, and then I was like, light bulbs are round. They have a funny shape. They're queer. I think light bulbs are
totally
queer.
Totally, sure.
Because they have, you know, they're like.
And they're challenging the sun, which is the straightest thing there is.
So we've learned today that they're
the straightest. Oh, the sun is the straightest thing there is. Okay.
Okay. I think the sun is heteronormative.
Okay, Katie cannot offend the sun. We kind of need the sun, and we need the sun to be bigger and more open than that. Do you want to upset the queers from the sun? That's a problem. We need the sun, Kate.
Take it back, Kate.
You're
Take
right. It back. You're right. And the sun like makes flowers grow, and that's pretty gay.
I mean... We can't.
The sun allows all life
very,
to live.
Very inappropriate what I want to say here, so I'm not gonna. But like, you can't call the sun straight.
I think that's true.
It's offensive. You have to redact this next episode.
It's so okay.
Redacted right now.
I don't know. The sun is multivalent. I don't know. Because like on one hand, the radiation is kind of oppressive. You know what I mean? I just got sunburn on the back of my calf.
You have to put sunscreen on. That's on you. Not
you can't
on
blame the
sun
for that.
Also, we fucked up the ozone layer.
Oh,
it's not
on
the sun.
Wow.
Okay, what about the moon?
What about the moon?
Where do you stand on the moon?
He's great. Why is the moon he? I don't know, but the moon is great.
We all think the moon's she.
I know. I was like, the sun is she and the moon is he.
Oh.
for real?
I don't know. This is what came out of me.
Okay, oh. Today, that's what Abdi's feeling about it.
That's cool.
The moon's great.
Okay. Really good. What the fuck were we talking about?
Light bulbs challenging the sun. Then you went and said,
and then you said straight. Many, many bad things about the sun. You want to offend the entire ancient Egyptian culture? You want to offend the sun god? Ooh. Amun Ra? Good luck with that.
Okay, the you looks, be bad.
The looks that I'm getting right now, I wish we were on video.
Do you need to ask Ebti about the origins of...
The wink.
Of winking?
My son winked. Oh, they're trying...
Oh, okay, actually, maybe you can weigh whispered. In on this.
Huh.
Okay, so...
I'm not going to take sides.
Actually, Kate has been obsessed with for
feel
a period
free
of
to
time.
Correct me.
Okay, or you're wrong.
Say,
okay,
no, thank, we're not
yeah, just
about.
pre, have that pre disclaimer. Okay, so it is thought, mm-hmm. at least whatever in the Western world,
yes.
that cats are from Egypt.
Yes.
Okay, but from my research, it's not exactly definitive that they originated in Egypt, but that Egypt like popularized domestic cats.
Right.
So, do you think cats could actually be from anywhere in the Fertile Crescent, and then also particularly Palestine?
Wait, that's the question?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Wait, what did you think the question was?
I thought we were just trying to figure out if cats were from Egypt.
Well, what do you think about cats and where they started?
I don't fucking care where they're from. Also, Egyptians right. claim everything was in Egypt first, so I'm not going to get on that train, because that train is sus. It's not
go.
A good train.
Okay, so you're on kind of on my side about it.
I'm
She's
like
definitely not on your side about it.
I am.
Yes.
I feel like you're on a different side. Yeah.
I am on a different side. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I just hate that we keep obsessing about where everything started because mm-hmm. the answer will always be Egypt, beer, Egypt, makeup, Egypt. What about all the civilizations before Egypt? There were more other
They started
ones.
In Egypt. There were a lot. Before Egypt was Egypt.
There were a lot of civilizations.
Yeah. So, I don't
I'm
know.
I'm okay with that. I like that. Like, we don't need to fucking worry about where things started.
But definitely the Egyptian culture, no, unmistakably put the cats in a very high regard. So that, we can talk about that, but where the cats start, I don't know where the cats started. They're great. Okay. That's all I know.
Do you like
the
cats?
I love cats.
You do? Okay.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on dogs?
Don't ask me.
And which one is the moon and which is the sun?
Everyone is a light bulb.
Whoa. Oh, yeah. Either yeah. on or off. Is there a middle state between on and off?
I dim.
A dimmer. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about okay. that. No one has dimmers. Like, not every people have dimmers in Egypt, of course, but like, you know what I mean? When you think about this type of
yeah.
bare light bulb in the wall, it's yeah. not on a dimmer.
Yeah, it's just on or off.
I prefer cats over dogs. I'm sorry.
That's pretty normal for this podcast. I wonder if artists in general are more cat people.
That's not true. A lot of artists, our friends have
and
dogs.
And have dogs, yes.
Yeah, dogs are great.
Well, give us a call, 419-351-6606, or you can email us, congratulationspinetree@proton.me. Artists, weigh in. Are you a cat person or a dog person? Is the sun gay or straight? And what do you think about the moon? Please answer each one in sequence.
What are the moon's pronouns? What is this phone number? Is this? Oh, okay. Because I was listening to the podcast as I was telling you, because I'm driving now a bunch, and I'm like, I wonder what will happen if I call this phone number, because I'm pretty sure I'm listening to you from 6 years ago.
That would be amazing. I'm listening to episode 12. No, it's
I am driving a lot, like... so I went all the way back in Apple Podcasts to get to the first one, because
no.
I was like...
Oh, my God.
But the first one on Apple Podcast is like number 200 and something. It's crazy.
Okay.
So it's from either 2020 or 2021.
Okay.
But it was funny because I was in the grieving space, you talk about the stuff that I witnessed, but I was kind of half there for it. So now I'm learning. I'm like, oh yeah, this is what this show was about. Oh, yeah. Okay. I see. So it's been fun. Anyway. Yes.
I got to go back and listen to those now and like put myself in your mind.
I was thinking that what you're doing, which, you know, not there isn't a lot of that, what you're doing. And we need people who talk about art and write about art. And in a way, you're documenting, like, years from now, you can know who was showing in the Bay, what they were thinking about. And that's very precious.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Love it.
Epti, I feel like maybe about a year ago, did I hear you tell me that you had a black belt in a martial art form? Oh my God. And if so, can you show us a move? Or tell us a little bit about that. I just love, I'm really fascinated with like the other lives of people.
What? Please, Brazilian please go on. Jiu-jitsu?
I didn't say Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Is it Brazilian jiu-jitsu?
I think no. It was maybe taekwondo.
Karate.
Karate, okay.
Yeah.
Black belt. Like not fucking around.
Second degree.
You could have taken that guy out with your dad. At the house, oh, yeah. The break-in.
I mean, my dad took him out. He had
he was already out, actually.
He was, you know, high and had one arm. So kind of in a disadvantage there when it comes to maybe sparring.
So yes, did you do karate in Egypt? Or
I started... My sister and I, there was an Egyptian actress called Samah Anwar, who is a lesbian, now we know. Which, of course, we didn't know. I didn't even know gay people existed. Whole other story. Doesn't matter. So we liked her because she did action movies.
Nice.
Like, you know, jump out of the window on a motorcycle type of thing and then hit the guys and all that. So my sister, because she was older, she's older. I mean, she's still older, obviously.
Shout out to your sister.
Nahil, hello. she said that we want to learn karate to be like Samah Anwar. My parents... who were very strict, you know, and conservative, were like, great, the girls can learn martial arts. Unattractive and strong. Very good. We love that. No boys. No boys will come near that.
No boys will come near you guys.
I went to an all-girls school. So the thinking has been with us in that vein. So I was 9 years when we started practicing karate in a club in Cairo. We call sports places clubs, which is, you need membership to go in, but it's not like clubs, like here clubs.
Okay.
So there is fancy ones, but we didn't go. Yeah. We didn't have money to go to, went to non-fancy one. Started practicing at 9 years old, and I was very good. So I kept going and going, and then I made it to the national team, and then I made it to the world championship. In 2001.
Isn't that amazing?
And then I lost. The 2001 championship was interesting because it was right after 9/11. Very stressful time. Yeah. And we're, you know, in Egypt, and that's a problem. And I used to be religious. I used to be veiled, which is also something I don't talk about. And they were like, you have to take it off to compete.
Oh.
And I was so upset. And I threw a stink and I looked up the rules and it's cute. Went on the internet and, you know, that's 2001 ancient times. And then anyway, I had to fight without it on, which was offensive to me back then. So I kept going in the national team, but then we got a new trainer and long story, my mom got sick and many, many things happened. So I was just fighting nationally. And then at some point I stopped because I had to work and make monies. I mean, I was actually paid a salary because I was an international player.
Wow.
But my parents were like, we sent you to an expensive school that made us not have money so that you can have money. So you can't be doing this bullshit like sports.
Go get a job.
Which is also why when I showed interest in art, they were like, you're not talented because I don't know how to draw. Which is when I said, when I want to be a musician, they were like, no, that's also not going to happen because money. So basically all these like kind of creative outlets that I wanted. But I also was like, I want to be a pilot. I was also that person. I also wanted to be a nurse in the army.
Do you have a Gemini in your chart?
Yeah.
Okay. It's very familiar to me. This, I haven't taken it quite as far as you, but the interest in everything.
It's my rising.
Me too. Oh, Lord, it fucks you up, man.
I want to also note that both of these people were 10 minutes late to recording. Gemini
that
culture.
That does not need to be noted.
I think that's
you need
Gemini
to redact
culture.
That.
Redacted.
That is no one else's business.
I am almost never late. Also, now I need to check if it's my rising or my moon. Oh. I always forget.
Gemini moon is a whole nother story.
I think
story.
It's your rising.
It's probably my rising. Yeah, it's my rising. Because my moon
what's
is
your,
Aries.
Oh, God. What's your sun?
Maysoon's sun is Aries.
Oh, I'm Cancer.
S-U-N.
Oh. But I think my moon is also Aries. Or maybe it's
no,
Aries.
Your moon something else. Maybe Gemini.
No, definitely not Gemini.
Got double my Gemini.
Is oh, yeah, yeah. My rising is Gemini, yes.
Yeah,
everybody
so.
Get
I
and
so.
My moon is
Aries.
Get co-star out.
No. I use the
my
pattern.
My sun is Aries. Oh,
really good. While we're working on that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's the story.
That's pretty amazing. Fucking cool. Have you ever flown a plane?
No. None of the dreams. All the dreams were crushed. I was just in, I think I got pretty good at music and then I stopped also. I went anyway. Karate is the furthest I got to doing something really professionally. And then I also dislocated my shoulder 5 times, which was one of the reasons I ended up stopping.
Do they have to just pop it back
yeah,
in?
Yeah, it's terrible. I have many
time.
Stories. We can do a podcast on relocating my dislocated shoulder. Ouch. Every time it was put back in different. And the five
oh,
times.
God. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So does that shoulder actually work today?
Yes, it does.
Amazing.
Wow. I had surgery on it.
Oh.
At some point, yeah. Because they had to tighten the ligaments because they were very, yeah.
And you also recently had hip surgery. Is all of this from, I don't have to say that all, sorry. Was all of it from being a martial artist?
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
no,
I wonder about that.
I am
that.
Getting a hip replacement soon. And I already got one and I'm getting the other one replaced, which is why I'm using a cane now because I'm in a lot of pain always and I can barely walk. But this, I have hip dysplasia. I was born with it.
Okay.
The martial arts didn't
martial
help.
Arts for you.
The martial arts didn't help, but it could have been easily fixed if it was detected when I was born. I would have worn one of those braces that they put kids in.
Right. I
yeah.
See. Got it.
Now you know everything.
Now we're really getting into everything. A couple of things. I wanted to ask about this German term.
Are you going
to
ask about Sehnsucht?
What's that?
Yeah. I don't know how to fucking say it. But
Sehnsucht. I mean, that's the only one I use in my art practice. I figured that's what you want to ask about.
I just like new terminology. Tell us about Sehnsucht.
I was talking about how, you know, everything makes sense, right? In my art practice, I'm like, oh, all my education things. Mm. I think I learned as an artist, and that's what I try to teach people. What you're drawn to from when you were a kid probably stays with you. Mm. And what you do now in your art practice, if you dig deep, similarly as our wounds and all our like abandonment issues, it's like because this one time when I was a kid, this one thing happened similarly to that. I feel like often it's like pay attention to what you grew up around and what you were thinking about, and you will see that there's a thread line that follows into your work now, probably. Mm-hmm. For me, I noticed this over and over again because when I was a high school student, that's a long time ago. Because I was in a German school, so we were learning about German literature and the literary epochs. And since I was a high school student, my favorite one was the Romanticist era in the German literature, which centered around the concepts of friendship, Sehnsucht, madness, nature, all that. And Sehnsucht is a word that also is used in English as German word because there is no translation for it. Because Sehnsucht is longing, but it's a longing, when you look up longing in the English language, it has a source. So I long for love, right? So when you find love, no more longing. Sehnsucht is longing for nothing specific, but it's the same feeling of longing, but there's nothing so you're just eternally just like... in an eternal state of longing. And I think people know the painting Monk by the Sea by Caspar David Friedrich. Trying to say it in English. So like this kind of big nature, small man, nature enveloping the human and all that, and he's like giving his back to the people, and so kind of this like kind of dramatic big feeling of being swallowed by nature and feelings and having this like longing. And then there is a lot of what was the other one, like the woman giving her back to the viewer looking out the window, which is why I work with windows a lot in my work, because windows are the places for longing because you're just sitting there looking out. So Sehnsucht was just so, it always touched me as since I was a high school student. Mm-hmm. And then I studied German literature again in my undergrad, right? So it's just something that it always resonated with me And then when I was trying to, you know, write about my work and think about my work and what I'm interested in, and I can see that there's just, I'm always just looking for something and I don't even know what it is, but it's just always this ongoing longing that's going on.
I'm so into that.
Good.
I love that there's a word for this sort of like undefined longing, actually.
Yeah.
It gives me like comfort kind of, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, again, it's always resonated with me. And even when I was a kid, and I'm like, yeah, so that's why I'm centering it around, you know, with like, speaking multiple languages, and not in a way that's braggy, in a way that's kind of confusing, and you're not grounded. Like I never felt grounded, and I think because I grew up in a household that is like 180 degrees away from my school, and then my karate, like all the things that I did, the people, Egypt being a very segregated country in class and religion and all that, and I was always someone who's going in and out of all these areas at the same time. My school was Catholic, German Catholic, all girls. My family was Muslim, lower middle class, you know, from a small village. Karate in Egypt, also a segregated way of martial arts. Have the fanciest martial art in Egypt is Taekwondo, and then it's Judo, and then it's, I mean this is also like my update from 20 years ago, I'm sure it's different now, but when I was active, karate, and then like kung fu is really on the, like, you people play it, practice it in like the alleyways in Cairo. None of the fancy people who go to the fancy club, at least again in the like the 90s and the early noughts, practice kung fu, and taekwondo was practiced in the nicest club. So it's, I don't know, this is, I'm sure, a whole other thing, but so the people I was with at the national team, just to give you a sense of that, when we traveled the first time in an international, you know, competition, one of the people never flew on a plane before, so someone gave him a cassette tape to go to the pilot to tell him to play it.
Oh.
Referencing how you go on a bus or a microbus in Cairo, and you can just give a tape for people to like listen to. Like, so this is kind of the level of education and exposure.
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah, so it's been that. These are wildly different people. Their language is different. Their practices are different. Their food is different. I mean, within that, we're all Egyptians, but yeah. So, ungrounded.
For real. Is there a word for, like, if you... Because it seems like if you have longing that just is, it seems like maybe it kind of has a target sometimes, and then you get it, and it's not, like, satisfying the longing. Is there a word for that?
I'm sure there is in some other language. You know, there is a whole, like, thing about words and languages that don't have translations.
Yeah.
You just go, this is a nice rabbit hole to go to on the interwebs. And then there's one in Japanese for like a mouth that is never full or something. Like all these very specific feelings that some languages just have an entire word for.
So interesting.
But I don't know the one you're asking for. I'm sorry. I'll keep looking.
Okay, really good.
Kate has this expression on her face that is very, how would you describe it, Maisun?
I would call it like a...
It's my mind is being blown left and right.
You're a cultural ambassador with the Arts Commission.
I was last year, yeah.
You were last year. It's just a year-long situation.
Yeah, it was just for one cycle.
What is that?
No, I mean, I was one of the grantees of SFAC's artist grant last year, 25. And then they reach out to me and they had to call out and whatever that if I could be an ambassador, which means that I just talk to people about the grant. So, I mean, there was an interview process and everything because they, I mean, you know, they're trying to make sure, do you want to say something?
No, go ahead. They're trying to make sure.
That people are reaching out into different communities in San Francisco. So, you know, being Arab and all that, I reach out into.
Was there a larger percentage of
Arab adjacent
applicants? Interesting.
As far as I know, none. Because that's, I mean, I know of a couple people in the area that are Arab, but then also the challenge with the SFAC grant is you have to live in San Francisco, which no one lives in San Francisco anymore.
That's a fact.
5 people live in San Francisco. So it was really a big challenge because I know a few Palestinian artists, So it was a lot of like, who lives in San Francisco type of thing. And I reach out to everyone. I mean, I also reach out to the people in the East Bay, knowing that they're not, but just kind of to spread the word. You never know. You never know. Yeah. They know someone, maybe they move. But yeah, so I was just doing a lot of outreach, and the SFAC people were like, there were many ways they wanted me to post on Instagram and all that. And from the get-go, I said that I will be doing more like one-on-one, because I just know so many people, and I use that power of just knowing many people to be reaching out and saying, hey, there's this thing. And surprisingly, a lot of people don't know about it, the SFAC grant. A lot of people don't know when it is, what it is, how it is. So it was just a lot of that. And I think I know a couple of people who I told about the grant, they got it. So it's great.
That's good. Yeah. Good work.
Really good. Okay, this is another kind of weird question. Okay, there's a
sorry.
There's a term, SWANA. Yes. Southwest Asian North African.
Yes.
Okay, Maysoon and I have been seeing one that is Siwana with a letter C instead of
Central West Asia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that kind of replacing SWANA now?
I don't think so. I think it's just some people try to, when they create opportunities, I mean, it all comes down, I mean, whatever, it's all words. I was just reading an article in an Egyptian publication where this writer was complaining about the term SWANA, and she was saying how she will never use it. And then she was kind of talking shit about like Egyptians or Arabs who live abroad and how everyone is fighting with each other. Doesn't matter. Just to say that it's a term, people are trying, and I think when it comes to creating grant opportunities and residencies and that, the Central West then would exclude India, I think.
Oh.
That's what happens. And so, is it India? Can someone check a map?
Yeah,
please. Where's Central West? Mind you, it's Central West Asia, not Central Asia.
Central
West. Because Southwest Asia would be like India.
Right.
And Bangladesh.
Sure.
Okay. So this is Asia. No one can see. It's fine. You know,
it's fine. People can also get their own map as
everyone
listening.
Now. Everyone, take your phone out.
Get your map out.
Look at Asia. Very nice.
It's quite huge.
It's very big. East Asia, we know, is like China, Japan. Central Asia would be like all the stands,
yes.
Right? So, I guess it's kind of the stands, maybe India. Maybe it's more about like not Thailand, not China. Yeah. I mean, all these terms are outrageous anyway, because none of these people share anything. I mean, there is a general...
It's so true.
There is a big general shared history of colonialism. That's it. Literally different languages, different religions, different foods, different cultures, different histories. But it's just... Okay, since we're at this talking point, I will use your podcast to suggest my biggest suggestion into this conversation. Of who we call what. You know how we say white people and people of color?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking we should say people and people of no color.
Yes.
Because the majority of the people are just the people that are not white.
Yes.
And then you can just say people of no color, and then they're the white people. And it's like people and people of no color.
I've often thought that all of those terms still center whiteness.
And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, I mean, so I know I'm taking it in a different space, but it's the same thing. Like same thing as BIPOC. It's so stupid. How are you putting BIPOC to, how are you putting all these people together?
Yeah.
These are huge amounts of people.
Yeah.
So anyway, lots of fights, but everyone is just trying to be inclusive. Everyone's trying to be refined in their inclusivity, and everyone is failing because the world.
Word.
Because the world makes it that we all fail. Very good. That's it.
And we're done. Done with that.
On that cheerful note. Institutional failure, not queer.
Not queer.
Oh, damn. Okay. I'm really getting schooled on queerness today. Okay, well, this brings us to our final question,
uh-oh,
which is always the same. And it is just, is there anything else you would like listeners to know?
Tonight at Southern Exposure, there's the closing event of Leia's show. My name is Palestine. I guess that's as good as opportunity as ever. Although people are not going to listen today.
This show's not going to come out today.
Shout out to that now past event. And also shout out to Valerie, because today she's also doing a little goodbye thing.
Yeah.
All the things she did for Southern Exposure, I think that's a good opportunity to say that. Otherwise, Thank you for having me. I didn't think about that question, so I have nothing smart to say. But I haven't been, honestly, just to be very clear, I haven't been going out much because I'm in pain and I'm not very mobile. So I just went to Ranu's shows at Wendy Norris that opened last week for like 5 seconds to say hi and look a little bit. There's always a lot going on. Get out there.
Get out there, folks. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on the show. And as always, congratulations. And for me and Maysoon, we're going to say Free Palestine.
Free Palestine.
Hell yeah. And from the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been
Congratulations Pine Tree.
The lions I can see. Think of this and grasp the hound.